Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. We are the one, 95.1 FM, and of course, for over 50 years, 1080 on your AM dial. Broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Northfield, Minnesota. Today is the 22nd day of October, and the year is 2018. And on this date in 1976, my daughter was born, so a happy birthday to my daughter, Angela. It's a beautiful morning, plenty of sunshine. You may be listening to this sometime in the far future. And I like to describe the day. Plenty of sunshine, a little bit of breeze, 39 degrees the temperature. And it is an election year, and things are going crazy on television and radio, newspapers and the mailbox. It'll be so nice when it's all over with. Well, today I invited a friend of mine that I've known for, 50 years almost, and his name is Roger Fetty, and he is the owner-operator of Fetty Electronics in Faribault. Do you own it now, or is your dad still the owner? Or is it none of my business?
No, the Fetty Electronics was started by my father in 62 in Faribault when he got out of the Air Force. And about 6 or 7 years ago, my brother Dave and my sister Kim bought the business from my parents. They're still down there every day. My dad's still building computers and fixing old radios.
You know, he kind of reminds me of, we just lost Earl Bakken from Medtronics, and I had the good fortune of being chairman of the board of the Pavlik Museum of Broadcasting, a wonderful museum, and he was the vice president. And I'll never forget, he invited me to, when I was elected chairman, he invited me to the campus of Medtronics, and I had never been over that way. And I thought, what is the deal here? And when I got there, it was amazing, escorted through the various halls and up to his office, and he had made some tea and some cookies, and we chit-chatted about the future of the museum, and frankly, it's going very, very well, and I'm sorry to hear that he passed away. He was certainly a pioneer in electronics. I would imagine somebody your dad revered.
Well, yeah, my dad had served in the Air Force in the late 50s and early 60s, servicing out of the SAC base in North Little Rock. And so he, you know, all the pioneering technologies were coming through that. And I'm sure he knew a lot of these people pioneering some of these electronics and stuff. My dad was always one that was, you know, he was building computers in the early 80s. He immediately got into building and repairing computers, you know, talking basically DOS and stuff like that. So he was always jumping on board the newest technologies.
You know, your dad kind of reminds me a little bit of Earl Bakken because of his demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just no quick moves, just nice, cool, and comfortable, and thoughtful. And, I, you know, for years I've been asking him to come and be on my show, and he just, I almost had him one time.
Yeah, he likes his bench. He's got his service bench, and, you know, that's, he likes to be there. He's always there fixing something, and it was that, and I can remember when he bought a farm, he farmed.
Oh, for gosh sakes.
Yeah. He's been 1969 or 1970, bought a farm southeast of Faribault. And so if he wasn't at his bench fixing stuff and selling stuff out of the electronics store, then he was out at the farming.
Well, let me see if I can figure it out. You must have been born in about 1959?
Yep.
Okay. So you grew up on a farm?
Nope. I was born in North Little Rock. My folks were in the Air Force. Do not remember a lot of it, you know, bits and pieces. And then when they moved up back to Minnesota, both my folks were from Otana. And so when they moved back to Minnesota, they decided to set up a shop in Faribault. I don't know the exact reasons why. However, my grandfather had a radio repair shop already in Owatonna. That was in the, was in Owatonna from 1939 to 1979 when he died. And so I think they just came to Faribault just to set his own shop up. So, no, I did not grow up on a farm. However, I have many fond memories, you know, 11, 12, 13 years old, going out to the farm and having fun and picking rocks.
All right.
Yeah, that's what, my father would trick us. He'd come on to the farm. We're going to stay at the farm this weekend and pick rocks.
All right.
For fun.
First time I ever heard that expression was from the late Bernie Hughes, who built the ballroom that work in on many occasions. And he said he hired the Randolph FFA, or the 4-H'ers, I can't remember which, to come and pick rocks. And I thought he was joking. I mean, and we pick rocks, you know, I mean, you pick apples and you pick cherries and you pick nuts and all that, but you don't pick rocks. And that's when I learned that the ground would upheave rocks every spring.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The winter frost would always cause rocks to pop up every year. We, where my dad's farm, particular farm, was notorious for being actually growing more rocks than crops sometimes. So,
okay.
And I do remember the Northfield Ballroom quite well because when Bernie built that, I had worked with quite a few bands back then, like in the ballroom days of 50s bands, and so that was pretty well-known space to me down there with Bernie.
Yeah, great guy.
Yep.
Roger Fetty is my guest here on KYMN Radio. He, along with his siblings, own and operate Fetty Electronics. I would assume then that your business of setting up for sound, and we'll talk all about that, is your own business, but not part of the store?
Yeah, the Fetty Productions, which is a completely different company, is something that I started in the 80s. late 70s, I was mixing bands, doing the ballroom circuits all over the state in northern Iowa. And then the 80s decided to start starting up a company that provided sound services. And that's been my own thing on the side, although it's pretty much a full-time second business, too.
You thrilled my wife. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yes, you did. She told me that she ran into you somewhere, maybe it was during the parade on Sunday, during DJJD, and that you said, man, that thing is over-modulating. There's something screwed up with your sound system. And I would be happy to come up and help you on that.
Oh, yes. Okay, now it's coming. The royalty float went by, and I went, we got to fix that. So yeah. I've offered to do whatever it takes to make that sound better because...
And I appreciate it because so, I think all the equipment is there. Just,
yeah.
I don't know what the wrong...
Yeah, there's probably just some settings not quite right or just we need to...
You know, you've worked with the equipment that I have,
right?
Which is pretty, really unique. I mean, it works wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the advantages I had is that I could control the music and the voice audio. And when I would talk about what's coming down the parade route, I could turn the music down and talk over it. And then when I wasn't talking to invite people to DJJD, I'd turn the music up.
Sure.
Is there a way you can do that from the inside of the cab where you can control that? Because all the controls are right on the float.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there would be a way to do that. Some of the new technology out there is, you know, has what's called auto-ducking and some software or stuff like that. And you can even have it so it's automated where the microphone, when you start talking, the music automatically pads down and comes up.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, you can have it totally automated.
Would that be a wireless mic? Or?
Yeah, you can. Any kind of mic can plug into
okay.
it. Yep.
Yeah, well, that'd be great because part of the fun of going through parade routes in the past with my convertible was the sound and the invitation that I would extend to folks along the parade line. And one time one of the young ladies says, how come you keep repeating yourself? You say the same thing. I said, well, you know, the next block didn't hear what we're doing right now.
Right, right.
So thank you for that offer. I'm sure she'll take advantage of that. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN, a friend you can count on. And Roger Fetty, you were born in Little Rock, Arkansas.
North Little Rock.
North Little Rock. Is there a big difference like South St. Paul and St. Paul?
Yeah, it's basically Little Rock, Arkansas, but it's sort of like St. Paul, North St. Paul.
Oh, okay.
And North Little Rock was where the SAC base was stationed, or was, you know, is at, that was in there.
And how many siblings do you have?
I'm the oldest of eight.
Of eight?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
That's what everybody says.
Okay, well, Roger, I'm going to do this. I'm going to write down, you're the oldest, and then after you?
There's David.
Okay, I'm writing these down for further reference. And how much younger is David than you?
About a year and a half or so.
Okay.
We're pretty close. There's not too many big gaps.
How about after David?
Then there's Doug.
Doug. Oh, man, that household must have been fun. And then after Doug?
There's Rick.
Oh, my goodness. Rick. And then after Rick?
Kevin.
Okay. Kevin.
Then Greg.
Greg?
Yep.
Okay. Greg.
And then Kim.
Is that a girl?
The two youngest were girls. There were six boys and two girls.
Kim. And who's the other one?
And then the youngest one was Shannon.
And how much younger is Shannon than you?
She's just about exactly about 15 years younger than me.
So kind of like by the time she was aware that you were alive, you had moved out or
it was close. Yeah, it was close. It was pretty chaotic in that household.
Now, where did you live? Where did you grow up besides going to the farm on weekends?
Well, my folks had a house in town in Fairwold.
What part of town, people?
If anybody's familiar with Fairwold, there's the Broster restaurant right up in that neighborhood behind
the Broster restaurant.
Yeah.
Are they still around?
Yeah. Oh, it's still there.
The one on 4th Street?
No, the one it's on it's kind of considered Highway 21.
Is it like Temple used to be?
Where by the Temple Plaza used to be one of the, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. And we lived right up the hill from there.
Okay. Where the motorcycle shop used to be.
And then, farther out was the motorcycle shop. So it's kind of in between that area there. Yep.
That's pretty close to the high school, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, about two blocks from the high school.
Perfect.
Yep.
I would imagine growing up, you guys were playing on the playground by the high school or grade schools there?
Well, no, actually, that whole area right behind our house during that period of time was a huge gravel pit.
Oh?
There was a gravel pit. And you couldn't
avoid rocks no matter what?
No matter what, we were by rocks. That's exactly right.
Roger Fetty, my guest on the Wayne Eddy Affair. And before we go any further, I know that you have been to the Quarterback Club in Northfield for something to eat in the past.
Oh, yeah.
And they have that great roasted chicken. They have the only flame-broiled burger in town. In addition to that, they serve breakfast from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Monday through Saturday. And you have 44 minutes to get in there. It doesn't take long. You just give them your order. And by the time you get comfortable in a booth or at a table, they'll bring the food to you. Breakfast of all kinds. Waffles, mountain meal, bacon and eggs, you name it, they got it at the QB. Locally owned and locally managed by Dale Finger and the crew at the Quarterback Club in Northfield.
Hi, I'm Isaac Rich and I'm 9 years old. I want you to know why voting yes for the Cannon River Civic Center is important to me. I like sports and playing with my friends. I play football, hockey, and soccer. I also play the viola. I like being a Raider and I think the Civic Center will bring a lot of new people to our town. Please join me for a tour of the ice arena and learn more about the Civic Center project on Tuesday, October 23rd at 5 p.m. or Sunday, October 28th at 1 p.m. Thanks for your support.
This message has been paid for by the Cannon River Civic Center Advisory Committee.
This is Julie Pritchard, Chair of the Northfield School Board. We have listened intently to our community to understand your priorities for moving the school district forward. You have told us to focus our efforts on the elementary and early childhood facility needs, school security, and to minimize the impact to you, the taxpayers. The Northfield School District bond referendum is in response to what we heard. With a crowded November ballot, please take time to become informed about this important local issue. Information about the bond can be found on the Northfield School District's website. Be sure to vote on November 6th. Thank you for your support.
Prepared and paid for by Northfield Public Schools.
Number 9 in all of 1977. Name that tune. Roger Petty, you know that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Star Wars thing.
Yeah. You know, most people recognize that, but do you remember who performed it? I'll bet you don't. I wouldn't.
Right offhand, though.
M-E-C-O, Miko.
Miko.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Star Wars theme, number 9 song in all of 1977, the year my guest graduated from Northfield. Nope. Faribault. Falcon, Faribault High School, and one of 8 boys. Wait a minute, 6 boys and 2 girls.
Yep.
Roger Petty and his business on Central Avenue in downtown Faribault. And by the way, I was down there when they had that, well, every year they have a big deal that goes on Central Avenue right in front of your store. What's it?
It was at the PCA barbecue.
Just a lot of cool cars and a lot of people.
They run a Friday night cruise vintage cars. Yeah. I believe it's once a month on a Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite a few things going on down there. The downtown has been restored pretty wonderfully.
And your building has been beautifully restored, but didn't somebody run into it or something?
We get an uninvited guest in the front door once in a while. I'm going to leave it at that. It's actually been a couple of times. It's a, you know.
Are they usually older people?
No.
Okay. Anyhow, you've seen videos, you've seen pictures, and you've heard about people thinking they're stepping on the brakes and they step on the gas and they jump the curb.
Yeah.
And usually it's at a convenience store, but right in the middle of downtown, that's highly unusual, I think. But
they've actually gotten quite a few of the downtown buildings.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, they think they're in reverse and they're in drive or inexperienced driving would be what I'd say is the biggest deal.
Well, Roger, tell me a little bit about growing up, because what I do is I do this on a chronological basis, where were you born and things like that. And I was not aware there were 8 Fettys running around. I had no idea. And especially 6 boys, all about a year and a half apart. That's got to be a fun story to tell. Now, how big was the house that you lived in? As these children kept coming along,
it was a two story. I'm not sure the style they call it. It wasn't a Rambler. It was a two story with multiple bedrooms. And in the 70s, my parents put an addition on it to have some more room.
Mm-hmm.
Added to the kitchen, added another bedroom. You know, so it was a fun time. It was a packed house.
Yeah,
you know.
Did you always have to share a bedroom?
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. There was the 3 old of us. Us 3 oldest boys had in an upstairs room, and then the other room was the other boys. And then pretty soon, when the addition was put on, my parents moved out into the addition bedroom, if I remember right, and one of the bedrooms became the girls' bedroom. And yeah.
And the girls always got the better of everything, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. They learned, you know, being the youngest two of 8, they learned that they're strong. They're very strong women because, you know, they had to fight their way for many things.
What was it like in let's say the living room? Now your father was in the television and radio business,
yep,
and phonographs and electronics. I would imagine you must have been some of the first people in Faribault to have a TV.
Well, you know, people, I think that was a pretty common thought. However, they didn't let us watch TV, not very much. There was one TV in the house. We were allowed Sunday night a couple of hours. I think the TV shows were probably something with Disney, and I think it was always Bonanza.
Yeah.
And that was the shows we were allowed to watch, and then it was off at 8 o'clock.
Are you too young to have watched Ed Sullivan?
I do remember some of the Ed Sullivan when I was very little.
Ozzie and Harriet?
Do not remember anything of Ozzie and Harriet. No.
I Love Lucy.
Yeah, well, you know, there were so many of those. You know, she had so many reruns. I do remember those shows. Yeah. I don't recall if there were a lot, you know, newer reruns. But
now, did you ever have to get up on the roof and adjust the antenna while your dad says a little bit to the north, move it to the
all the time?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was putting up antennas when I was, you know, 14 years old, and delivering TVs in style, you know, console stereos that were, the 60s, 70s vintage that were, you know, 400 pounds and 9 feet long, and they had a TV, a stereo, a tape deck, these things were just massive.
Well, you know what? You just reminded me of something. KYMN Radio turned 50, and 60 Minutes turned 50 this year.
Yep.
And I think Monday Night Football turned 50 this mm-hmm. year. And I remember when Monday Night Football came on, in living color.
Yes.
And I covered the Vikings. And so, you know, I was totally familiar with the Vikings. And I had to be able to watch the games that were away, of course.
Sure.
And I went into your store, and I'm sure you don't remember this. I think it would have been a 1970.
Right? Sure.
70 or 71. And I got a console TV that was as big as the end of this table to the window over there.
Yep.
And it had television. And it had red velvet on each side of it with posts in it.
That would have, well, and I'm surprised I remember this, but that would have been a Packard Bell. Would have been the brand, because the Packard Bells had models out that had the red velvet and the things like that.
Yeah, I can't remember if it had any other electronics to it. I think it was just maybe a television.
I'm pretty sure that there was a model, and I kind of remember it. It was just a big television chassis.
Because
in 70 or 71, and I'm surprised I remember this, but we would have had Packard Bell. We had Admiral televisions.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it was about 71 or 2, we took on the Magnavox franchise from a place that was closing in Faribault, so we took over the Magnavox franchise, so it was Magnificent Magnavox.
Well, it seems to me that I bought that, and I lived in an apartment, and it took up the whole living room portion of it.
Yeah, they were huge.
And then I moved over to the end of 6th Street here in Northfield and brought it over there. And I know you had to carry it up a stairwell to get it in, and then you had to really work it to get it in the door. But, man, did that look grand, and it worked great.
Oh, those were the golden age of American-made electronics, all those televisions, those giant consoles.
And I was thinking Admiral, but the more you mention it, Packard Bell sounds like, boy, that was cool. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure if it had any kind of red velvet on the side, there was models of the Packard Bell that had that. And I do not believe that the Admiral ever had anything with red on the side that I can remember.
Okay. Well, what about the other one that came out that always associated itself with Stars? We had a dealer here in Northfield that I can't remember the name. I had it, but I lost it. But anyhow, I think it was a less expensive model television.
I'm not sure. Associated with Stars, that's kind of drawn a blank.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm wrong. I've been wrong before. So tell me about the most difficult job that you ever had in regards to putting up an antenna.
Oh, well, trying to think that, well, you know, we put up towers and rooftop antennas. I would have to say that probably the most difficult one we had was one that we put up one time on a building at Shattuck campus. It was a 3-story building. You had to kind of crawl across some little awnings and stuff to get up to the roof. The roof was, if I remember right, the roof was slate. It was steep. So we actually threw ropes up and over and tied them off on the far side to pull ourselves up there. And I just remember being up there and not being able to stand and try. It was almost like you were sliding off the roof. So you literally had to sort of mountain climb up this roof. And I remember putting that antenna up there thinking, what am I doing up here? Many times. But I think that was probably, that one sticks out in my head just because of the slate roof. And it was three stories tall and it was, you know, very steep roof lines. And
now, when you were putting that up, how many TVs could be connected to one antenna?
Well, in those days, you know, you could put an amplifier on the antenna, bring it down into distribution, and if I remember right, there was probably 10 or 15 TVs hooked to that one antenna.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Because there was amplifiers available, and, you know, they're not anything like stuff is today where it's all digital, but it was, you know, vaguely remember much in the 60s, but by the early 70s, if you remember the flat wire, I remember drilling holes and helping wiring houses with flat lead. Yet, that's the little flat 300 ohm wire.
Yep,
it wasn't
okay.
The round stuff.
Two.
It had two wires on the wire on each edge, and you had to twist it, and you had to mount the everything on the roof just right so it would not get wore out by the weather those worked most of the time. Sometimes they did. You'd put them all up, and they really didn't work very well.
So tell me about, by the way, Roger Fetty from Fetty Electronics is my guest here this morning at 929. And, Roger, tell me about the proof or the myth that the rabbit ears, you know, there were so many different kinds, and then tinfoil became part of the rabbit ears in some homes.
Well, if you're talking about rabbit ears in the 60s, 70s, or 80s, anything more than about 15 miles from the transmitters was more of a myth that they would work. They really didn't work. However, technology now, if you're talking current technology, believe it or not, some of the UHF antennas, the distance is a lot better, you know. The difference between them type of systems and what's happening today is the digital television of today, if the signal's even off a little bit, it doesn't work. There's no fuzzy TV picture. It's either on or off.
Okay.
And so, believe it or not, that recent storm that went through, if you would have asked me 25 years ago if we would still be putting up antennas today out, I said, I don't think so. You know, cable and dish and all these systems out there, we wouldn't be doing it. However, in fact, right now my brother and my other brother, Doug, are probably out putting antennas because I don't know how many they've put up in the last 3 weeks, but we dozens and dozens and dozens of them that got blew down by the storms.
And they can, these antennas can pick up both, what am I?
Well, the new signal is basically HDTV. It's broadcast out of the cities. There's actually quite a few stations of free TV, they call it, basically.
Yeah.
Over the air television. the thing that's happened with that technology is that those transmitters that they're using are able to transmit such massive amounts of signal that the range is out there. You know, Northfield, Faribault, even on into Otana, if you put a small UHF digital antenna up, you get very good signal and you get quite a few stations.
And that's ultra high frequency.
Yep, ultra high UHF, ultra high.
And those are the channels that are not 2 to 13, but beyond.
Well, it's 2.1, 2.2. It's the digital channels.
Okay.
And, you know, so there's like a 4.1 and 4.2, but it's not the VHF, which is very high frequency of the old days. It's UHF, ultra high, but it's also total digital. So, when you get those stations in, if the station comes in and works, it's crystal clear.
But these are, televisions that are made to receive those are not, 25-year-old television.
Oh, no. You have to have a television that accepts those signals. Any of the stuff we sold in the 60s, 70s, 80s, And even most, a lot of the stuff in the 90s doesn't receive that stuff.
So how does I got a portable, a handheld portable TV one time with a, you know, pull-out antenna. And it seemed to work pretty good. This is back in the early 90s.
Yeah, that would have been a VHF receiver. And towards the end of that VHF transmission era, the same thing with the technology. They were transmitting very, very large watts of RF power. And so, you know, like if you were in Northfield with a little handheld like that with the antenna up, it probably picked up stations just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to a foreign country that allows more than 100,000 watts on FM and more than 50,000 watts on AM?
No.
Have you ever heard about that station down in Mexico?
Oh, the one that's broadcasting like a million watts or something.
On AM.
On AM, yeah.
And as you drove up to it, your lights would come on.
Yeah.
It would turn on your automobile lights. It was, I think, 100,000 watts. Werewolf or Wild Wolf or Jack was the big disc jockey on that. It is 9:33 on 1080 Radio. So tell me a little bit about Mom and Dad. Your dad, where was he born?
Both my parents were born in Otana, Minnesota.
Okay.
They were raised there. My father worked for my grandfather in the 50s, went into the Air Force for electronics training, and then married my mother, and they were down in Arkansas for 4 years while he was in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
My brother Doug and Dave and I were born in North Little Rock. I think that Doug was just born and literally hopped in the car with, you know, or was put into the car with my mom and came back to Minnesota and went to Faribault. They owned a trailer, which interestingly enough, they actually had somebody pull it back to Minnesota. It was parked behind nobody would remember where it was at because it's all gone now, but it was basically sort of underneath the highway where the highway went through by the Walmart. In the 70s, the stretch of highway around Faribault wasn't even built yet.
Yeah. Was that out by the Evergreen Knoll was?
It was just past the Evergreen Knoll, and it was back there. I do remember that. They parked it behind the Moose Lodge. It was a round-roofed lodge that was back at the end of that road there. And it was parked there for, I don't remember the time very much for sure, but it was a year or two there, and then they bought the house, sold that trailer, and...
You know what they called that round roof? They called that a Quonset hut.
Yep.
Yeah. 9:35 on 1080 Radio. Did you get a chance to meet enjoy your grandparents on your dad's side? Let's go with the Fetties. Your grandparents. What do you remember about them?
My grandfather died in 79, but I did know him. You know, he had his radio shop. Kind of interesting enough, anytime you went down to my, you know, the grandpa and grandma Fetty's house in Otana, it was on Pearl Street, right down from where the police dispatch center is.
Mm-hmm.
He would be out at his bench. He would be sitting at his bench, thinking back to that. And his shop was full of old radios, you know, the 30s, 40s, 50s radios. Some of the stories we've heard about. Yeah, they moved to Otana in 39, but during the 30s and Depression, they actually lived in Meriden, which is a small town between Otana and Waseca. And when they lived in Meriden, he ran a gas station. I actually have the actual gas station price sign that was out on the pole. I have that.
How much?
It was 19 cents a gallon. It was 15 cents a gallon and 4 cents a gallon tax, I believe.
Yeah, I remember as a kid getting a buck's worth, and you could, you know, cruise for a little while.
When he lived there with the gas station, and I think that's, you know, I have seen a lot of the paperwork and stuff, but he actually had a broadcast station out of Meriden before the FCC was even formed, or during that time period in the early 30s, late 20s.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think he did, because, you know, there was no electricity in rural Minnesota then, and so farmers would come in on weekends and go to church, and they would drop the batteries off at his gas station, and he would charge them so they could take them back home that night, and then at night they would leave the gas station, and he and people would go, and they would broadcast, you know, down in Meriden, and all these farmers would turn on their Atwater Kent radios and listen to these broadcasts, and they would bring in people to talk just like we're doing here, and so, and they would have music and, you know, things like that. And I've seen the documentation where for several times that he went to D.C. to try to buy the frequency, because they were selling the frequencies back then.
Yeah.
And the first time, the story is that they didn't think Meriden was big enough to have a radio, you know, to sell, that if you went to a bigger town, then they would probably sell it to you. So that's what caused him to kind of move into Otana, and he went back. Well, he missed buying the station. Somebody else bought it. It was actually WCCO.
WCCO?
Yeah. That's the frequency he was trying to buy.
Oh, 830?
830.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
So that's what he was trying to buy. So he ended up not owning that. And some of the other things we've, you know, some of that stuff that he did through the 30s is pretty interesting. He had a portable movie theater system that was built into a trailer in an old Model T Ford. And they would, each town in southern Minnesota, different night the merchants would stay open, and then after the merchants closed, they'd run a movie. So different nights of the week, that, you know, so he had this route that, you know, every week he would be in one town and they'd run these movies. And the merchants liked the serial movies, because then the people would have to come back the next week to see the rest of the movie. So
did they show them on the sides of the garage?
No, he actually had a big screen painted white built onto the side of the car, and then he had a projector booth built into the trailer. Oh. And he would unhook the projector booth, point it at the car in the middle of the street, because, you know, there wasn't street lighting like we thought back then.
Yeah.
And it was they would run these films, and so it's a pretty interesting part of history, that part. There's one rare photograph of that vehicle that I have. And they also had sound cars after that in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, where he'd built, the early ones were hand-built speakers on top of the roof of the cars. They would drive in parades just like you do with your music, and he actually had phonographs suspended on springs, and he would usually use station wagons, so he had the room, and he would suspend phonographs on those things and play the records going down the street for parades. 78s,
yeah. Yeah. Maybe even wire?
Well, he built tube antennas or tube amplifiers, and it was generally, because there was a 78s with electric phonographs, you know, in those periods after the windups. And so that he would build those and run them down the street and play the music for parades. And he also did sound production in, interesting production, but anyway, he would do sound in the grandstands for fairs. And of course, again, a lot of times there was no electricity at these fairgrounds. It was, and then the other thing that was interesting, and it didn't come into till the 30s and 40s, was that speaker magnets had to be made with a coil. So you had to power these magnets up, or these coils up, with a battery to make a magnet so the speaker would work. So he would go around changing car batteries at the base of each of these speakers, and they would last 2, 3, 4 hours is what the story is, I'm told, and they'd have to go change the battery again. And then he had tube amplifiers to run that the announcer would use the microphone.
Now, speaking about tubes, do you believe that a tube amplifier has a sweeter sound than diodes or whatever they're called?
Well, the technology of tubes, and I've got tube amplifiers. The interesting thing with tube amplifiers is, because the tubes themselves actually interact with each other as audio is put into them, I think there's a certain warmth, there's a certain quality that you just can't get with solid state. With the technology I'm using today, the quality is very, very high quality. But if, you know, if you were if you're playing vinyl, and you run it through a tube preamp with a tube amplifier to some nice old speakers, it's unbelievable what you hear that you don't hear on the normal phonograph.
And turntables are coming back, huh?
Vinyl's amazing comeback. I'm glad I didn't throw all my turntables away.
Yeah.
It's for sure.
It's amazing how some people say, you know what? I'd like to, you know, buy a vinyl like I used to. And then they, well, wait a minute. I haven't got anything to play it on except those cheap. Well, you can buy those cheap ones at Target.
There's some really poor quality ones out there that don't do the vinyl justice.
No. We're going to take a break. Our guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair is Roger Fetty. He is a technician when it comes to sound. And we'll find out if he ever does video. But we'll be back right after this important timeout.
I'm Britt Ackerman, and I'm honored to serve as the president of the Economic Development Authority. I love Northfield and its citizens. The Cannon River Civic Center will generate substantial revenues for our city and its businesses. The Civic Center will generate over $1.3 million in tourist revenues from tournaments alone. This doesn't even account for other revenue-generating activities like concerts, trade shows, conventions, and community events. I travel throughout the state for my work. Everywhere I go, people I talk to are familiar with what Northfield has to offer, yet they don't make the effort to visit. The Civic Center will draw visitors from outside the community who will spend their dollars on restaurants, hotel rooms, and retail purchases downtown. And the Civic Center will create more than just economic benefits. Civic centers build communities, a place for people to gather for entertainment, sports, arts, education, and togetherness. For more information, please visit ci.northfield.mn.us.
This informational message has been provided by the City
Kenyon
of Northfield.
Kenyon Ace Hardware sends its support to the Kenyon Wanamingo FFA students attending the National FFA Convention going on this week. Keep up the great work. Kenyon Ace Hardware has all your fall and winter supplies, rakes, shovels, lawn bags, and much more. Kenyon Ace Hardware handles steel and Cub Cadet power equipment, including chainsaws, trimmers, and snowblowers. For all of your painting needs, Kenyon Ace Hardware has a full line of Ace and Valspar paints for projects inside and out. So visit Kenyon Ace Hardware, your locally owned full-service hardware store.
Liberal Todd Lippert is no different from his Minneapolis party bosses. They raised taxes on farmers, families, and seniors by $2 billion, wasted millions on sculpture gardens and luxury offices for career politicians. Lippert's political pals made our health care bills skyrocket. They taxed our insurance to pay for the broken Minsure website, gave big bonuses to Minsure executives. We can't afford more of that. Say no to Todd Lippert on November 6th.
This independent expenditure is paid for by the House Republican Campaign Committee. It is not coordinated with or approved by any candidate, nor is any candidate responsible for it.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Number 6 in 1977.
You baffled me. It's been so long. What do we got?
Music is a world within itself. You hear all this music when you're doing various festivals, but it goes in one ear and out the other, huh?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. This is Stevie Wonder and Sir Duke.
Sir Duke, yeah. I was recognizing the Stevie Wonder part, but couldn't remember the name of the song.
14 minutes before it's 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, Roger Fetty is my guest on Kim, a friend you can count on. Roger is the oldest of a family of Roger, David, Doug, Rick, Kevin, Greg, Kim, and Shannon. And they're from Faribault, Minnesota, and we're just chit-chatting about your business. By the way, have you been to the Pevock Museum of Broadcasting?
No.
I gotta go. Yeah. You'd find more than anybody would really appreciate what we've got up there. It's amazing. So your grandfather was in the beginning. And,
yes.
And could have had WCCO, but 830 was already spoken for. Which reminds me of the, and you don't have to mention the calls, but a guy gets a license for a 100,000-watt FM giant for Blooming Prairie, Minnesota. You talk about way to work the
that way to work
the political. Oh man!
Yeah. Yep.
just keep talking, Wayne. Keep going. All right. So we talked about any other great stories about Grandpa Fetty.
Oh, I was just trying to think of different ones that have come to mind.
Did you have a lot of cousins on that side?
Oh, there was lots of cousins.
Okay,
and they're all down Otana, that area.
Can you go past your grandfather on your dad's side, the Fetty name?
I don't know a lot about before that. I know that there was, I believe he was one of three brothers. They definitely immigrated, their parents immigrated from Europe.
Germany?
Probably something... Believe it or not, it's Fetty is mostly German, but there's a pretty big mix of Czech and I think a few others in there.
Are you ever going to send in for the DNA test and find out?
Well, you know, I see that on TV, and I think that'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah, it would, except I've heard some people comes back and says, you're European. Well, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're European.
Yeah, and then, of course, the senator, that's one... 1,024th. Yeah, Cherokee.
Yeah.
So moving over to your mom's side, and tell me about your mom's side of the family.
Well, my mom's side, I never knew my grandfather because he had died when my mom was. Either probably like 11, 12, 13, and very young. And so my grandmother, Matichek, my mom's mother, raised three girls and a boy. And she had a corner store for in the 40s and 50s in Otana, like a little what's you call a convenience store now, but then there was corner stores, markets everywhere. And so that's how she raised those kids. And then, of course, my grandma, very, very old-fashioned, very strict person. But she was always, you know, she had lived a very interesting, very hard life. There was, you know, my one aunt had gotten a little bit of, had gotten polio back then, and so then because people weren't really informed about polio, the store almost failed, and you know, lots of stuff like that happened, and so it pretty amazing history there. They very very strong, you know, and then my mother actually was a nurse in the 60s and worked at District 1 for a while and stuff, but then when she started having so many kids, that kind of didn't work out anymore. She had to be stay-at-home mom. But she also did books for my dad. I can remember back then the radio repair shop office was actually at home because Ma would stay home with the kids, but she'd also do all the bookkeeping and paperwork and... So there was there was this little section of the house that was the store office, and none of us were allowed in there.
Now, would your store have a second and third story, or just a second story? Your downtown.
The downtown building's just got a second story.
Okay. Now, is that like a rental apartment?
Well, you know, it probably could have been, but we have collected so much antiques and so much stuff through the years that there's not a. I don't know what we're going to do with it all, actually. We have massive amounts of old stereo equipment. And
well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, you have a basement.
And the basement's full, too.
Yeah, and I was thinking with that type of a business, you know, you'd probably want to keep one of everything, you know, for sure. And
I think we've got five of everything, five actually. It seems well, like.
That, all the more you should go up to... the Pevic and take a look at the stuff they have and talk to them about what they're looking for or need and make a, you know, something that cost $9.99 50 years ago. You can donate it for $5,000.
Maybe that's possible. Yeah. I have no idea what they'd be looking for.
No,
you know, we've got the one thing we've got, which, you know, when my grandfather died, then over the next, you know, 5-10 years, his radio shop was cleaned out. So we had gotten a lot of his old radios, and we also inherited, you know, a massive collection of old tubes, you know, 30s, yeah. 40s, 50s tubes. Some of them are television tubes. If, you know, most of those aren't really worth anything, but the old radio tubes, however, have become extremely valuable. You know, the 5-pin base for the Atwater Kents and the little bit newer radios like that.
I'm old enough to remember that you could go to the corner
drugstore and test your tubes.
Test your tubes.
And you hope that they had an honest tester.
Oh, you mean that? I never thought of that.
That was, you know, you always had, there was a number of testers in Fairwood back in the 70s, and we also had tube testers, and I remember people saying, well, we thought maybe we'd have you check these tubes, because we went somewhere here, and it says they're all bad. And we check them, and they're all good. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. I always thought if you stuck your hand in the back of a radio or a television set, you'd get shocked and die. I think everybody kind of had a fear of reaching in there.
The very old radios, there was some spots, if you got your fingers on them, you'd definitely get woke up pretty well. The televisions, for sure, when I was in high school, changing out high voltage transformers. All the televisions had high voltage transformers, and the cathode ray tube, picture tubes, had an anode on them that was anywhere from 25 to 35,000 volts.
Wow!
And those tubes would store that voltage. So if you didn't discharge the tube correctly when you were replacing it or junking out the TV, if you got in there, it'd let you know. I only a couple of times did I get hit before I learned quite well not to. You know, to double check that stuff had been done.
Reminds me of the story about up at Fort Snelling. They had the Village of Yesteryear.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a blacksmith there. And I was going through on a tour, and the blacksmith was pounding the horseshoe.
Mm-hmm.
And he threw it on the floor. And I thought, that looks interesting. I went to pick it up, and, of course, I dropped it right away.
It was pretty hot.
Yeah, and he says, hot, isn't it? And I said, well, I don't know. And the punchline is, it just doesn't take me long to look at a horseshoe.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll be right back after this time out with Roger Fetty on the Wayne Eddy Affair on Kim, a friend you can count on.
This is Barb from Professional Drive Dental, letting you know that the doctors and staff at Professional Drive Dental are proud to call themselves Northfield Raiders sports fans. Whether scheduling for an implant, mouth guard, or general visit, we look forward to providing you with the same exceptional care that Professional Drive Dental has delivered for over 35 years. So on behalf of Dr. Becky Johnson, Dr. Brian Craby, Dr. John Nowak, and our newest addition to the practice, Dr. Tyler Yonke, go Raiders!
Hi, I'm Alyssa, director at the Vital Link Adult Day Center on the Three Links campus. Our program is for adults requiring care during the day and includes nutritious home-cooked meals, stimulating group activities, as well as outings to local attractions. Vital Link provides support to caregivers during the day. Transportation is available. Please call me at 664-8865 to schedule a tour or find out more at threelinks.org.
And you're gone too far, 'cause you know it don't.
Well, you should know the name of this one.
You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely
let me think here. It's coming. I remember the song, but it's
gone too far. It's Rich Girl.
Rich Girl.
By Hall & Oates.
Hall & Oates, yeah. That's right.
I know a lot of people. I've had people on that didn't recognize any of them.
Yeah.
And of course, they played violin.
Well, the 77 was. There was a lot of great music then.
Yeah, and there's some bad ones, too. We'll get to those.
Yeah, the disco side was a little weird. But
4 minutes before, it's 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio. My guest this morning is Roger Fetty from Fetty Electronics in Faribault. And we're chit-chatting and going down memory lane, and we're learning that he is the oldest of 8 children. What did you go to that church that's out there by KDHL?
Yeah, we went to IC Church, Immaculate Conception, which is now turned into Catholic Communities.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the new spaces out by the KDHL towers. Which, talking about high power AM, now here's an interesting story from the 70s.
All right.
That you'll get a kick out of. So our shop gets a call one day that there's something wrong with this lady's bathroom that we've got to go fix it. So we go out there and
something's wrong with her what?
Her bathroom.
Her bathroom?
Yeah.
She calls Fetty Electronics?
Yeah, she calls Fetty Electronics. She said there was a radio in the wall.
Oh.
So we go out there, and it only happens at night. Well, that's when they would crank their power up. Well, it was Hiram Higsby. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
He was doing his radio show, and every time they cranked the power up at night, because that antenna is designed to broadcast north-south. The array is focused north-south, but this house was on the south side of Fairbolt, and so when you went out there in the bathroom, she had these glass mirrored tiles on the in the bathroom, and they would start their harmonic. Somehow the harmonic was tuned to some of that foil that was on those mirrors, and it was like AM radio playing right in her bathroom.
Absolutely,
and she couldn't get rid of it. It was the funniest thing.
What did Jack Hyde do about it?
He just laughed and said, "Well, you know, I hope you enjoy the program."
You know, he was one heck of an engineer, from what I understand.
Right. Yep.
And he built that as a, you know, directional.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he also, he didn't like me.
Oh, that's...
Can you imagine
I can't imagine. That's not even possible.
And he would call the FCC on me. And I always kind of got a chuckle out of it because I knew that he was playing around with his directional towers, I thought. I mean, he was the engineer, and he could outspeak the FCC guys. And he's the one that designed the Hastings radio station tower. Well, do you think maybe that thing was tuned to go a little bit further north and east and west than it would be south?
Oh, of course.
So I often wondered about that. What do you think about that? KYMN Radio now has 95.1 FM, the low-power FM available for communities like Northfield, which
that's
would have
awesome.
Been fantastic. You know,
yeah.
When we first started, it would have been wonderful, but now can do the ball games and
the low-power FM has really taken off, and it's I think it seemed like it had a little slow start, but now people are figuring out better ways to use it.
Well, the rules and regulations are that you must broadcast in harmony with your AM facility.
Right.
You know, so you can't split it off as a different entity. But as you know, FM comes in better in downtown stores and factories than AM does. Just that's the way it is. But you take a lot of people aren't aware of this. If KYMN is 1,000 watts at 1080 a.m. on the third wave on a 306-foot tower, clear channel, that thing sings. But when CCO at 50,000 isn't 50 times.
Oh, no.
The higher you go, the lower the ratio, right?
Yeah. It's not a direct correlation of power.
Yeah.
I think it's like a magnitude of 10 each time you want to double your distance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an insane amount of power to double your distance past 50 miles.
Amen.
So,
hey, we are going to take a brief break, and we'll be back, all right? Our guest this morning is Roger Fetty. We're going to take a brief break, and that brief break is going to be a tune from 1967.
67, all
you
right.
Remember, you were like 8 years old?
Yep.
You remember this song?
Oh, yes.
I'll tell you the story behind it while we take a break. KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, AM and FM.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? You'll be older.
We're back live and in color on the Wayne Eddy Affair from beautiful downtown Northfield, Minnesota, the 195.1 FM, and of course for over 50 years, 1080 on your AM dial. My guest this morning is Roger Fetty. He is, along with his family, the guy that has the Fetty Electronics Store in downtown Faribault, and the savior of parade sound on many occasions. Why keep blowing out speakers, and I don't know why that happens on that piece of equipment I have.
Well, Wayne, maybe they're just really loud, and you got to, you know, maybe. And
I am hard of hearing.
Maybe hearing's catching up, so you keep cranking it louder. Yeah. And
I listen.
Maybe we'll just have to figure out a way to hop it up a little bit. We'll have to do a little extra engineering on it.
You know what my favorite line is going through a parade route, especially when there's a lull in a lot of people?
No, I'm always at the other site, so I don't hear you.
No, I'm talking about other communities.
Oh, when you got your car going through.
Yeah.
Yep.
I go, you got to play along, okay? Knock, knock.
Knock, knock.
No. You say, who's there? All right. We'll try it again. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Jesse.
Jesse who?
Just see how much fun you'll have at Defeated Jesse James Days.
Oh, that's
in Northfield,
good. That's a good hook.
And
that's
you,
a good
you
hook.
Get laughs and you get awes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And anyhow, it's a lot of fun to do that. And thanks for keeping that equipment running because it's 30 years old, I think. Time flies.
Oh, yeah.
So, Roger Fetty, tell me, we were talking about on your mom's side, and your grandmother had to raise your mom and some siblings by herself, and she was kind of a don't mess around type grandma.
Yeah.
But what about the food? What about Christmas and Thanksgiving? Where would you guys go?
Well, we would, for years and years and years, Christmas Eve, we would go to Grandma Fetty's house, and then Christmas Day was always at Grandma Matichek's house.
All right.
And we would eat too much, and there was always too much food. And
but
you
coming
know,
over with eight kids, did you have aunts and uncles and a lot of cousins?
Oh, yeah. No, the Grandma Fetty's side, the Grandma Matichek, they was always packed full.
Yep.
Lots of people. Yeah, it was the Grandma Fetty side that Christmas Eve, there's all the cousins, and you know, and as the years went by, my Grandma Fetty did her Christmas thing right until, you know, probably the middle 90s, I would say.
Okay.
She was a very determined to, you know, not grow old, as you say.
Yep. But were you an altar boy?
When I was in grade school, yes.
Yeah. Well. That's
and then I actually, I don't know if I want to admit this on the air or not, but when I was in high school, I was actually a song leading choir, or I would do song leading at the masses on like Saturday 5:30 masses and sometimes Sunday morning masses.
Are you singing?
It's hard to believe that I sang back then.
Oh, okay. What about your first bicycle?
My first bicycle was definitely, well, actually, I almost think my first bicycle, I got a paper route and I bought a little motorized dirt bike.
Oh.
I mean, I had a bicycle, too, but the thing I always wanted was a motorized dirt bike. And then that led to, another dirt bike, and then...
What kind?
Well, believe it or not, the one I bought that was more of a real motorcycle was a 1977 Harley AMF 175.
That's
it was bought from that Harley shop out there.
Yep.
And I rode that for a while. It was the blue. They had made two colors, orange and blue. I bought the blue one and rode that for a while. And then I bought another used bike. And then I bought I think I had a couple of Hondas. And then I kind of didn't ride for a while. And, you know, 15, 18 years ago, then I bought another Harley and I still ride now.
So you have a Harley?
Yep. I have a Harley now.
Is it a touring bike or?
Yep.
Okay, so you got a little luxury going there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you ever tour a lot?
No, the last couple summers have been so busy that I've not put very, like, almost no miles on
it. But you got the ponytail for it.
Well, yeah. Well, I haven't decided if that has to do with riding the Harleys or if it has to do with being a sound guy.
A sound guy?
Yeah. So it fits both.
Right. And we're going to get into that because that's a pretty interesting profession that you have. Roger Fetty is my guest here this morning on KYMN Radio. And so when you say, did you say Maticek?
Yes.
Why is that name familiar with me? Is that like a dealership for some heavy tractors or something?
Well, there's the Maticek tractors, but it's not the same. It's not actually even spelled the same, but it's the same pronunciation.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, I remember when I first came to town and I was I said Skluzacek instead of Skluzacek. Yeah, people got mad. Like, I should know that. Well, yeah, you know, if you're going
to be around here.
Funeral announcements, you should have the right pronunciation.
The right name.
I don't know anybody named Skluzacek. So, when in your store, did you go to credit cards? Do you remember?
Oh, that had to be very early 80s or late 70s. It was back when you used to lay them in the tray and roll the paper on them. And
did your dad hate that?
Yeah, I think that, I don't know if he hated it, but it was just another thing that was a nuisance to deal with.
Yeah, and cost you money.
And it cost you money.
Yeah.
People don't realize how much it costs the business and, you know, there's no such thing as zero interest cards, even if they say they are.
Yeah.
Somebody's paying for it.
Well, I was at a place the other day, I won't mention where it was, and I said, if I pay cash, can I get a discount? And I was figuring if it was $50, you know, maybe 48 or something like that.
Right.
And they said, no. I says, so you'd rather pay for my credit card than have the cash in hand? Anyhow, it was an employee, not an employer, so they didn't have the right to do that. So.
Right, yeah.
But anyhow, I did in Owatonna when I bought my first CB radios. I did negotiate a deal because I had an American Express, and they are really off the charts charging.
Oh, yeah.
And I said to the guy, I got the best deal I could. And then I said, can I get another discount because I won't use my American Express? And that was when CBs were popular. Tell me about that. You must have been in that business.
We sold thousands of CB radios in the 70s. You know,
I had one in my Gremlin and one in my Pacer.
10-4, good buddy.
Yeah, I was Morning Mouth.
What was Morning Mouth?
Yeah, because I did the morning show.
Yeah, I was TV Kid.
TV Kid?
Yeah.
Breaker.
Breaker 10-4.
Yeah, TV
Keep
Kid,
the rubber
you out
side
there?
Down and the metal side up.
Yeah. So, was there a good profit in that? Did you do most of the installations?
We installed hundreds and hundreds of them for quite a few years there in the 70s because that was, you know, we put them in trucks, we put them in campers, you know, and we put a lot in cars, but believe it or not, a lot of them were in, you know, trucks. And a lot, we sold lots and lots of radios to, you know, farmers putting them in trucks because it was a cheap communication out on the farm. And we'd even sell them home base stations with antennas that were up on towers, and then they'd put them in their trucks. And
did you work with Johnson out of Waseca?
We had sold the Johnson brand of the CB radios, but not the Pro radios. We didn't have the FCC install license for the Pro radios.
Okay. You mentioned something earlier that I was asking about installing, and you said, oh, we did towers and we did antennas and all that. Now, when it comes to towers, you weren't tower people, were you?
Well, we installed a lot of the 50 to 90 foot TV towers, and we, you know, you'd set the base and then you'd go back a week later and put it together. back in the day, there was many times I'd put up a 50, 60, 70 foot tower by myself because I would actually have a rope with a hook on it. And lay out the sections on the base and keep pulling them up by one, bolt them together, crawl a little higher, tie in, pull up the next one.
Just like they build skyscrapers.
Yep, just about. Not quite as high, though.
So were they triangular?
Yeah, they're triangle antenna towers. Okay. And
would you be able to climb them on the outside for bulb? Well, you wouldn't need a bulb at that height, would you?
No, none of those required any type of the, the clearance
stuff.
Well,
you put a whip.
I've actually climbed a couple of the KDHL ones back in the day. He used to call me up and make me go up and climb and take down old antennas.
Would you charge?
Not enough. But he would, if you remember him, he was...
I definitely do. I've been on top of the tower KYMN has, 306 feet.
That's pretty a tall good. One.
That's a tall one. I think down there in Faribault, they're like 150 maybe.
Yeah, I think the ones are 150 or 175. And then he used to have, he had that FM one that bent over, so they cut the top off and shortened it. And I think that one originally was a 250, and I think it's like 125 now.
Oh, the one on Cannon City Boulevard?
No, it's out past the AM towers, so off to the left. It was the FM antenna, because the AM towers were there.
Yeah, but they moved that.
Right, yeah, back when it was there. It's not there anymore.
Yeah. No. They moved that because they wanted the Northfield market.
Yeah, they went up on the hill.
And, yeah, not maybe 3 miles as the crow flies, two right. miles from where I live. Anyhow, and then he opened a studio next to, in the place that was next to the State Farm Insurance Building, over on the kitty corner from the Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 4th Street. And I'll never forget, I was a member of the Northfield Area Chamber of Commerce Ambassadors. And we visited new businesses. And Jack opened a studio and called it Northfield. Of course, the legal identification had to be Faribault. The tower, the tower was in Rice County.
Right.
But he opened that studio in Northfield. And as an ambassador, my job was to go and say, welcome to our community. That was one of the toughest things I ever did, is to smile and be happy and shake hands with Jack and say, welcome. Anyhow, that lasted about 3 months at the most. 14 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is me, it sounds like. Roger. Oh, well, what's different about that? Roger Fetty is my guest. And Roger, sometimes I have people on and we can go on for two shows. And I'm right in that position of what I want to do, extend more on what we're talking about or get into the entertainment business that you've been in most of your adult life.
Yep.
And I just want to make sure that I got everything copacetic with the Fettys and Matichek's.
Yep.
And your memories going down memory lane and all that stuff. Did you ever go over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house?
Well, usually it was in the 57 Merc down 35 to a dime. That was the 35 was the river.
You were born in 59, so that freeway wasn't in there until 1965.
Well, the section from Faribault to Otana was in there actually earlier than that. That one section was the first section in the state of Minnesota, believe it or not, between Otana and Faribault.
Oh, okay.
When they came back from Arkansas, though, in 62, they actually came up, it was Highway 65, which has been pretty much broken up.
Yeah.
You know, but there was, but the road back then was Highway 65.
Yeah.
And so, but in the mid-60s, you know, I remember that stretch from Faribault to Otana was the first one that was done.
Okay. And I remember the late Carl Rovog was governor of the state of Minnesota. He's from Northfield.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that officially opened at 35 up in the cities. And then there was a big scandal that the contractors used products that weren't as good as projected, and that they got a low bid but poor quality. And then that, at that time I wasn't interested, but I do remember that, thinking about, well, that's too bad. At 17 minutes after 10 o'clock on a beautiful Monday morning, this is the 22nd, my daughter's birthday, got to remember that. She already told me what she wanted, so I can take care of that later. But right now, let's get into that part about the kids and the living room and the fights and arguments. When you were in middle school and high school, were you involved in anything other than choir?
Well, I was, there's some interesting stories there. Of course, took, you know, small engines class because we were definitely very mechanical. We wanted cars when we turned 16 and all that. Took electronics class, interesting enough, and I think I can probably admit it now, 41 years later, so I don't think I'll be in trouble. But I got kicked out of electronics class.
Really? So yeah. Did I.
Yeah, well, me and a friend, I won't mention his name either, but he knows who he is. We used to do some stuff in electronics class that would just really upset the teacher. Yeah, it was all in fun, but it wasn't taken very lightly. So
what did you do?
I'm not going to admit anything.
Well,
of that.
what's a little spook,
well,
you know?
we'd rig little capacitors to pop when he opened up the classroom and stuff like that. It was pretty interesting.
But you were talented and passed.
We got kicked out.
Oh.
Yeah, we got kicked out. And I remember the words of what probably started some of my other career to now. I remember the words being the principal saying, well, since you two guys are being so creative, we're going to put you in theater arts. So we got kicked out of electronics and put into theater arts.
Did you like it?
Oh, I loved it. I always wanted to be the star on stage, except for back then, the gear was nothing like we have today. And so the theater director, who the high school in Faribault, the theater is named after him, he was the teacher.
What's his name? I don't want to put you on the spot. Do you remember the name?
Yeah. Oh, of the theater?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Faribault High School Theater is... No, I'm drawing a blank. Now you got me on the spot.
He was a
but he was favorite. He was there for many, many years, uh-huh. And he figured out that I could never be the star of the play because I was the only one that could keep the stuff working. So he put me. So I turned into the Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
So then that sort of set up the direction I went and I enjoyed music. I played violin for about 15 years and I sang. In the choir, and then I did some singing in church back then.
Did you do the Kyrie stuff, or did you do English? Or you're too young for Latin, aren't you?
It was traditional choral music.
Okay.
And so we'd done all that, and then that definitely opened up and led into a lot of what I'm doing today with production and shows and sound and. Because it was definitely, you know, I was really interested in it. The equipment back then to now was a little bit frustrating. Even in the 80s, the sound equipment you could buy and the amplifiers and speakers and stuff, it just wasn't very good. It just, you know, they did. But it's evolved. And in the last 10 and 15 years, in the last 5 years, the stuff that I'm doing now is incredible. I mean, the type of equipment, the quality of the equipment, what we're able to do with it, it's all network-based.
Well, I've seen the improvement on Bridge Square in regards to the sound system you set up for the parade.
Yep.
And General, and then you also do the Joseph Lee Haywood banquet out at the Northfield Ballroom. And I remember when he built that and who put in the sound system there, and unfortunately... A lot of people didn't know how to work it, and so we just got you independently to provide the sound rather than use the sound that they have there. Although I'm sure George can work it, but when you were in high school, you were, you know, the leader, being the oldest brother. Were any of your brothers jocks?
I think we were more technical, and we did. We didn't do a lot of athletic stuff, no. Most of my family went the technical side, mechanics. I had a number of brothers that were the top 1% in the automotive programs back then. And not top 1% statewide, top 1% nationally.
Wow.
Scored. And so they've all went off into one of them's a lead technician over here at the post or Multimill building,
mm-hmm.
And the other one owns the dealership in Faribault, the Ford dealership. We were a Ford family. I know
your
that.
Your brother owns the Ford?
Yeah.
Bliss Ford?
Yeah. Yeah, about six, seven years ago he bought that.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's partnered with Jeff Bliss, one of the original sons.
Okay.
But it's, so yeah, everybody's been very talented in the areas they've done.
What about your sisters, the little girls?
Kim is, you know, has worked at our store, running the store. And so then my brother Dave and I are the ones that bought it from my parents. And then my youngest sister, Shannon's, actually lives just up by Hastings. She's in the probation and works for the county government up there in probation officer management and stuff, and does a lot of that type of stuff.
Well, I imagine she had a lot of experience working with the brothers.
Well, the older brothers, yeah, they can come in and talk to her, and she just looks at them and she says, I've heard it all. You know, she just would laugh at him, saying, "Well, you don't intimidate me," and you know.
What about fights? Did your kids fight in the living room?
You know, we did wrestling. I don't, you know, we didn't really have serious fights, but it was always, you know, when you have eight kids,
yeah,
in the middle of the winter for Christmas, and usually Christmases were awesome. My mom loved buying presents and just filling up the tree with presents, and so Christmas morning was always just amazing, but nobody could wait, so they'd hand out all the presents, and it was just like an explosion of paper in the living room.
Did you go to midnight mass?
No, we usually went to Sunday morning mass.
Mm-hmm. What about being the oldest by a year and a half? Were you the biggest then, and so were you kind of like the boss?
No, they never listened to me.
No,
no. I mean, I was the oldest, and I, you know, when I was 15, of course, there was still babies and diapers coming into the house, and, you know, so there wasn't much attention to me. If I was 15 and could take care of myself, it was like, you know, it was always the littlest ones, you know, so, you know, I think, you know, when I was in high school in the 70s, I was definitely a little bit of the rebel.
Why
the teachers I can't believe you'd think that, but I plowed a pretty wide path so that all my younger siblings came through, they all went, oh, another Fetty.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, did you play a musical instrument?
I played the violin.
But yep. Was that cool when you were in high school?
I don't think it was cool.
No,
I don't think so, although I totally enjoyed that I did it.
Did you ever play the Hot Canary?
I didn't know.
Have you ever heard of it?
I am not. No.
You're the second violinist that I've had on the air that
didn't know what the Hot Canary was.
And the
Yeah, no, and I don't just think that. Well, when I was in school, the teacher was it was all traditional orchestra.
Well, if you want to Google it, Hot Canary, go ahead and do it. I'll take a break, yeah. All right? You're listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair on the One KYMN 95.1. We'll be back with Roger Fetty right after this important timeout.
Are you looking for spacious senior living in Northfield? Feel at home at Northfield Retirement Communities, Northwood Pines. Available for individuals and couples, this assisted living combines the privacy of one-bedroom plus den apartments with family-style meals and care available around the clock. Visit us online at northfieldretirement.org or call us today at 664-3466. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Paul Nemisto here, conductor of the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra. We are thrilled to have Don Thibodeau, one of our own, be the piano soloist in George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue as a part of a concert series called American Memories. It'll also feature Howard Hanson's Romantic Symphony and Copland's Hoedown from his rodeo ballet. Join us for this exciting music on October 27th, 7 p.m. at St. John's Hall in Northfield, and on October 28th, Sunday, 3 p.m. at St. Ansgar's Church in Cannon Falls. Tickets are available at the Northfield Arts Guild online or at each performance.
Have you heard Liberal Todd Lippert's plan for even more expensive health care? Lippert backs a complete government takeover of health care that would double our taxes. $17 billion in new taxes on Minnesota families. Lippert's takeover would close rural clinics and hospitals, jeopardize access to care, and put bureaucrats between us and doctors. And he'll keep taxing our insurance to pay for the broken Minsure site. Say no to Todd Lippert on November 6th.
This independent expenditure is paid for by the House Republican Campaign Committee. It is not coordinated with or approved by any candidate, nor is any candidate responsible for it.
Oh, yeah, we're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair. I'm Kim, a friend you can count on. A beautiful day, 42 degrees our temperature, and plenty of sunshine. And we have Roger Fetty in studio. And Roger?
Yes, sir.
Name this tune.
I feel you touch me in the pouring rain.
Bee Gees.
That is correct.
And totally missing the name. Bee Gees. How deep is your love?
That's right.
There we go. You got it's it. Coming back.
All right.
Okay, that's one out of four. I'm doing okay.
At 10:28 on KYMN Radio, we ask Roger, your first car ever that you had that was yours, you bought it or Dad gave it to you?
That's very funny because this is a good story. In fact, I
want to hear it.
When I turned 16, in the 60s, my dad had a 1964 Galaxy Country Sedan station wagon, giant station wagon. You know, they're classic cars now, and they're very, so the choice I had when I got my driver's license was either do not have a car or buy that station wagon for $50. No 16-year-old wants to be driving around in a station wagon. However, since it was the only choice, that's what I bought. So I had this station wagon for $50 that I fixed up and drove through high school. And I'm sure that many people, if there's anybody out there that knows me from that era, probably remembers that car.
What color was it?
It was a white Galaxy, big white giant station wagon.
Now, were you into hauling equipment around at that time?
No. This was during high school yet. It would probably have been a good car to do some of that, but it's... so that was my first car. And a side note to that is that car, of course, was a Minnesota car. It was pretty rusted out. I fixed it up a couple times. Ended up scrapping it out because it was just too far gone. Kept many parts off of it. And I actually found one in Arizona about 5, 6, 7 years ago, and I've got it back to my place that I plan to get back on the road again. But it's a rust-free version.
Oh, really?
I'm gonna duplicate exactly what I had in the 70s.
Tripping down memory lane.
Yep.
Well, I got to remind people on today's 15 with the author. Terry Knight talks with Helen Wilkes, author of The Aging of Aquarius, Igniting Passion and Purpose as an Elder. Wilkes, now in her 80s, offers inspiration, practical steps, and extra resources to reignite your passion as you move into retirement. She talks about how the teens and young adults that started the youth movements and hippie culture of the 60s are retiring and wondering what to do next for the next 30 years. Well, Helen shares how to make this stage of your life the most powerful yet. And that'll be at 11 o'clock this morning on 15 with the author with KYMN's Terry Knight. Don't miss it. Roger, you're redoing that old Ford station wagon, the white one.
Correct.
Are you going to use Mr. Bondo?
No, it doesn't need any Bondo. That's the amazing thing about it. It absolutely rust-free.
Your first one cost $50. How much did this one cost you?
It was a little more. The shipping was even a lot more.
Oh,
to get it from Arizona to here. But
did somebody drive it back?
No. We shipped it back.
Oh, okay.
There's custom haulers that haul classic cars and stuff. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot more expensive this time around to fix it up compared to back then. But
and that's just a dream that you have that, for example, my first car was a 38 Ford, and I would love to have one, you know. But they're a little pricey right now.
They're pricey, and, that late 30s, they were... A lot of those were scrapped quite quickly for the war effort.
Yeah, and they were all steel.
And they were all steel, yeah.
Yeah, if I took my Ford, 38 Ford, and hit a 2012 Honda, it'd be toast.
It'd be like a popcorn a pop can when you run over with your tire because it wouldn't even would bounce off of it.
What really surprises me sometimes is that we use magnetic signs for parade route, you know.
Yep.
And the parts of a car that are not metal.
Yes, they don't stick. They don't. The magnets don't stick to a lot of these cars because they're,
Or you got to shrink wrap them nowadays. So when you got out of high school, did your folks have a dream of sending all 8 of their children to college, or insisting that they go to college, or you want to do? Get out of the house. We need the room.
Yeah, it was a different time back then. It was you weren't pushed as much to go to college. I went to a couple of different factory engineering schools in the late 70s because electronics industry in the country in the 70s was quite strong. The manufacturing and engineering and everything was here.
Zenith was in the country.
Yeah, Zenith, Magnavox, Admiral, Philco, Packard Bell. In the 70s, we sold a lot of high-end Marantz audio. It was all American made.
Marantz.
Yeah, Marantz. We have a massive, that's an addiction to me and my brother have, is we have a massive collection of Marantz down at the store, down the basement and upstairs. So that's kind of where I got my training, and, you know, I decided to stay in the family business and started doing sales and all that stuff. And in the, you know, the 70s and 80s were sort of probably the heyday of retail with stores like us, but then by the middle 80s, the big box stores came out. In the very early 80s, pretty much all the manufacturers, because of some trade change rules in the late 70s and stuff, all the manufacturers had left this country. I remember in the late 70s when I went to those engineering schools, touring the factories, and like Magnavox had 4,000 to 5,000 people work in these factories, and by the beginning of the 80s it was down to 400, you know, literally that fast.
Yeah, it's amazing. I have Apex reel-to-reel?
Ampex.
I've got one of those.
Yep.
And it also has an 8-track playback. You think that's worth anything?
Well, it's a extremely good nostalgic piece. The reel-to-reel has got to come back, though. Reel-to-reels are coming back, especially the vintage.
Good.
Yep.
Because that's a good name.
The Ampex was the higher-end mechanical reel-to-reels and stuff like that. 8-tracks, part of it's probably not worth anything, although it's a great nostalgia piece.
Yeah.
We still actually have some 8-tracks and stuff like that, players and...
There might be some people that are interested in that.
Yeah, you never know.
Oh, you know, they run into a box full of 8-tracks, and they say, how do I play these? Well, if you've got some...
Yep.
I'm going to tell you a story and see if you get it. Have you watched television sports, for example, and they're interviewing guys like after the game yesterday, the Vikings?
Sure.
And how everybody has a handheld as small as a cigarette lighter recorder.
Right.
And it can hold more than 25 7.5-inch reels. Okay, I had the opportunity to interview Johnny Cash. I'm name dropping now. Okay?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good name to drop.
And I had to carry a woolen sack.
Oh, my goodness.
Tell them what a woolen sack is.
Well, if it was a portable reel-to-reel woolen sack, it was probably 50 or 80 pounds.
Yep.
You had to plug it in.
Yep.
It had lots of cables hanging out of it to make the mics work.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Did it have the big square microphone, or was it a regular mic?
I think it had that square one. This would have been in 65.
Yeah, that would have had it. It would have been a big metal-based microphone with a screw on the bottom.
And the reason I tell that story, and I've told it before, is just because of how things are today and how convenient it is to get sound bites and compared to the old days, as they say. Just like this thing here, this computer, that's a program all by itself. Push a button, you can walk away.
Yep.
Back in the old days, you had to have a live human being.
You had to always be live throwing vinyl on.
Yeah. Yep. Do you have a radio engineer license, FCC license?
No.
Have you ever thought about getting one? At least a third class?
Maybe. I've got so much going on, I haven't thought about anything else I need to do.
Well, they're required at some radio stations to have a first-class license, and definitely at a television station. So I just wondered if you ever went that route.
We had what was called a C-class back in the 70s, and that's how you were able to install CB radios and do all that type of antenna work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, that all kind of went away, and we just, with the computers and the security installs and everything that our store does, it kind of turned into, we just didn't go that direction.
Well, I had a C, a Class C license, and I went to school to get a first-class license, but boy, it was all done on theory in six weeks.
Yeah, tough.
It was. I didn't... that school that I went to, Brown Institute, had integrity. They told me to get out of there, that class, because I'm not going to pass it twice before I got it. Now, nowadays, they keep you right up until the very end and say, get another loan and do it again.
Do it again, exactly.
22 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota. Roger Fetty is my guest this morning on KIM. And you just got done mentioning that you installed security systems. I did not know that. Isn't that a big corporate-type operation nowadays?
Well, some of the big corporates want you to think that, but believe it or not, there's so much niche market work and so much custom work, you know. The mainstream is, you know, the security system in your home for $99 installed and so much a month and stuff. And we actually don't really do a lot of that because most of those systems are not really that good of security coverage. You know, they're not really a truly thought out engineered security system. They are an alarm system. They work, but that's about all they are. We're doing so much with the computer based and integrated systems between, you know, door control, burglar video, IP video is the big catchphrase now, is IP video security.
What's intelligent product? What is IP?
Well, it's Internet Protocol, so it's basically computer-based video cameras.
Okay.
We've been doing a lot of fairly major installs on those. We've, you know, just completed a few months ago, a school in North St. Paul with, you know, 50 cameras with big servers on them.
Wow.
And I've been building and designing the custom storage servers for them and all that type of stuff.
How did they find you down at Turbo?
It's word of mouth.
Okay.
Somebody at the school knows me, believe it or not, from my sound company.
Yeah.
And they, by the way, do you do this? Oh, yeah, we do that too. And so word of mouth, we do a lot of work in Faribault, a lot of work in Otana, a lot of work for like Jawson's Corp, name dropping again, of course.
Yeah.
But
cool.
So it keeps, you know, that technology and the work that we're doing is it's ever changing. You know, you don't in depth learn stuff like we used to. We used to go to a service school for an 8-hour day to learn repairs in the 70s. Product, you don't component repair anything anymore. You diagnose what module to replace, and believe it or not, like the low end consumer electronics is throwaway, but there's a huge amount of the market in electronics is still not throwaway. It's still, you know, you can get it repaired. If you would ask me 20 years ago if we'd be fixing TVs at our store today, I would have said no, I don't think so. If you go into our store, there's 25 flat screens lined up on our carts to be repaired. But they're, you know, they were $1,000 or $1,500 sets. And so if they can get them repaired for a couple $100, we still fix them.
Oh.
So we're still doing TV repair. It's hard to believe.
Is it automatic? You put something in a hole and it reads back what's wrong and then you just replace that part?
I sure wish it was like that, but that's that.
Know.
No. It's, you do have to still actually have technical, you know,
savvy
and do a little component tracing. The advantage of the internet and the companies that we do the warranty repair for is we have access to their websites, and we can enter in the model number, the serial number, the symptoms, and their database will tell us most likely you need to check this, this, and this, and if that's the case, then this piece needs to be replaced. So,
okay.
So we're still doing a lot of the repairs.
I one time had a real nuisance thing going. A red light was on in my car, and what the heck? I wonder what's wrong with that. And I brought it someplace, and they ended up putting the gas cap back on, and away I went. And they said, normally we charge $35 for that.
Oh.
And I thought, well, thank you for not charging me. I had no idea that some computer is going
right.
to turn on my dashboard lights because the gas cap isn't on right.
Yep. And well, and part of that, yeah, a lot of those gas tanks can tell that there's not the cap on because the pump and the sensors determine pressure, and it's also a safety feature.
Now, does your education and background give you an advantage in regards to vehicle car repair?
I think that, with my grandpa being electronics, my dad in electronics, us in electronics, and growing up with the technology, I'd say yes. A lot of the new cars are self-diagnosing, though, like you said. And so, but understanding that it's not always a complicated issue. I do a lot of repairs that are from the experience where I'll go, well, you know, none of this really makes sense. Let's look at it from a different angle, and it'll turn out to be just a loose connection or a loose screw or a dirty connector or, you know.
Well, Roger, one of the things I'm pretty much afraid of computers, and the reason is, and you tell me whether I'm right or wrong, is that I think at some point it was a dangerous thing to click on this or click on that, and you could go offline or blow a whole program or miss something up, mix it up by hitting the keyboard wrong. Is that still...
Well, you can mess up your computer pretty fast if you're clicking on the wrong things. Probably the biggest thing with computers is when you're online is the viruses and, you know, clicking on a link that installs some type of a hacking virus or, stuff like that. It's gotten a lot better. The softwares have gotten better at not allowing that to happen. If you do a little bit of reading and install antiviruses, that helps a lot. Really good firewalls help a lot. And just not clicking, not just automatically clicking on every attachment or on every email. If you see an email that you don't know where it came from, and it says, hi, click on here because we have information for you to win $1 million, I would recommend not clicking on
it.
So it's, you can, it's not like it was in the early days. Early days, viruses, we'd see computers come in with viruses on them that the people said they weren't even online. And I'm like, well, that's possible, but a lot of that's been fixed.
Good. You know?
And the hardware is getting better, and the hard drive and the mechanics are getting better. They're getting smaller. They're getting more energy efficient. So all that technology is advancing so fast.
It's 14 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio, the Wayne Eddy Affair. We'll take a brief break, and we'll be back in just a moment with our guest this morning, Roger Fetty from Fetty Electronics.
You may have heard that this November Civic Center referendum is only about a hockey arena. This couldn't be further from the truth. Voting yes will support a multi-use Civic Center, along with providing an additional $5-plus million to our community's parks and trails. The better part of 2 years has been spent developing a true Civic Center project that would include community meeting and conference spaces, along with two sheets of ice for hockey, figure skating, recreational skating, and curling. In the summer months, there would be space for many other sports, conventions, trade shows, arts and craft fairs, and so many other uses. Please vote yes for a stronger community on November 6th. This message has been paid for by the Cannon River Civic Center Advisory
Committee. Army National Guard is offering up to a $20,000 enlistment bonus and other tuition benefits to qualified candidates, including new recruits and those with prior prior military service, already received your education, or are currently in school, you may be eligible for up to $50,000 in student loan repayment. Get the education you need to land the career you've always wanted. Learn more about the many benefits that come with serving part-time in the Army National Guard. Visit NationalGuard.com today. Sponsored by the Minnesota National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota State Broadcasters Association and this station.
Oh, a little bit of disco here on the Wayne Eddy Affair.
Best of Your Love by
E. Mo.
Emotion. Yeah. I Best of Your Love.
Well, I tried.
Yeah.
You've done good. It's 12 minutes before 11 o'clock. Don't forget 15 with the author with Terry Knight coming up at 11 o'clock. My guest this morning is a fellow by the name of Roger Fetty. And, Roger, I have been able to stretch this out, and that means that I would like to have you come back and maybe on a Friday when my show is just an hour.
Oh, sure.
And you're not busy.
You just let me know.
And I want to hear all about what it's like to do what you're doing in regards to how I know you. And
sure.
That's setting up sound for bands and orchestras and all that. But I'm going to say something that you might, you can take it. When you've been in Best Buy, bright.
Yeah,
and,
occasionally.
And open and displays like crazy. And then when you go in your store, it doesn't have that modern look. It looks like the Fetty's.
Looks like a 70s or 60s radio like TV repair shop.
Yes, that's exactly
that's what it looks like.
And I'm wondering if that's done on purpose or whether your dad says, I want to keep it the way it is because this is my life, or whether it's too expensive or whether you're too busy or why you don't go ultra-modern and have the lighting and shelving and displays.
There's a couple of reasons for that. I mean, my dad definitely likes the shop, how he's always had it. The retail side, we've done some stuff the last 10 years on it to kind of get more display space. The majority of the work of our stores is our install work. So the retail side, just because of trends and markets and everything. I mean, like, you know, even the Radio Shack in Faribault closed.
And Northfield.
I mean, you know, just electronic parts stores like us just don't exist anymore. And so we're a little bit of a kind of a dinosaur there as far as we still keep a retail site open. What's surprising is the people that do come there that are looking for parts, they go, well, this is like the Radio Shack of the 70s. They remember because that's what Radio Shack started off of, was like a hobbyist electronics radio supply store. And so, you know, we keep some televisions. We have loyal customers that buy all the TVs from us. They buy stereos from us. We keep a lot, you know, some of that in stock. You know, those items, none of that stuff's really very much profit. There's not much margins on it. You're competing with online sales. You're competing with the Best Buys. And even the Best Buy giant stores are, I don't want to say struggling, but they're having to become more and more competition. You know, if you look up in Minneapolis the last 10 years, two different giant chains have gone under. And Best Buy is the only one that's left. You know, Circuit City's gone. And what was the other one? There was another one that went under. And, you know, so all those chains are gone. The trends, you know, some of it's buying online, some of it's people a lot of the products last longer, too. You know, so you're not replacing your TV every 10 years, you're replacing it, you know, but some people are replacing it sooner because they want the bigger on the TV for the, you know, the Vikings when they're playing. You want an 80-inch television.
80.
Yeah. And I can get those. I mean, come on down. We'll sell you an 80-inch. I mean, you should have an 80-inch to watch the Vikings on, obviously. But so those trends are definitely part of that change. You know, in Minnesota, some of the, you know, this will be my ever so slight political statement. But, you know, Minnesota's, like in Rice County, the sales tax is pretty high. And so we'll have people come in, we'll we might even have the same price on an item, but because they have to pay sales tax with us and they don't have to pay if they buy it online, they don't buy from us. So, you know, some of that affects it, and that's too bad, but that's the markets the way they are, and it's not, there's nothing you can do about it. That's the trends.
Well, now, when you were a kid and your dad had the retail store down on Central Avenue in Faribault, between what, 2nd and 3rd or 3rd and 4th?
The first couple of years, he had rented a space on the west side of between 1st and 2nd.
Okay.
Just a block down from where we're at now. Yep.
Okay.
And in 66, 67 is when he bought the 205, the original store. And then he probably in about 77, we bought 207. Yeah. Which was the second, the other half.
So what I was going to ask, what does your floor plan look like in regards to a banker today and back in the 70s? I mean, do you even think about that, having a floor plan or with so many units and so much value and turnover and all that?
No, because, you know, the days of manufacturing and floor plans and all that stuff, that went away in the late 80s, early 90s. They didn't have to do it anymore. And, you know, I can remember in the 70s, my dad floor planning entire shows and semi-loads of stuff. We'd fill the store up. We couldn't even walk. I mean, we couldn't even walk in the store because we didn't have enough room. And he'd buy two semi-loads of televisions, and we'd be hauling all this stuff in. And he would do private sales. And, you know, we've got, you know, back in the heyday or the golden age of retail electronics with, you know, small shops, you know, he would put on private sales that we would sell out half the store. And, you know, he won awards for that in the late 70s.
What's a private sale?
Well, you would send out flyers, and it would be by invite only, and there'd be special pricing and discounts and special financing because, you know, you used to be able to set up financing, pay for the TV over 6 months with no interest back then, and, you know, so we used to do all that. Well, that all kind of, that went away in the late, the middle 80s to late 80s.
I'm still trying to think of that one company that had the TV, and it started, I think, with an M. And there was a store over on Northfield's west side that had it, the Carrolls.
Munts.
Munts TV, didn't they?
Munts TV.
Quasar?
Well, there was Quasar, too, but Quasar, I believe, evolved. Well, I don't think so. Actually, it was Munts TV.
Okay.
And the reason I know that is there was a couple, in the late 70s or early 80s, there was a professor over here at St. Olaf that wanted to get rid of some old TVs, and he called us up and said, do you take old TVs? And we normally didn't, but he said, well, these are 50s Munts TVs. I'm like, oh. So I went over and picked them up over here, and I still have them. They're out the shop.
What are you going to do with those?
They're just sitting there, and we look at them. I have no idea.
Is Munts a flash in the pan, or was it a big major low-priced?
No, it was an actual manufacturer back then, the ones I've got. I mean, and if you look at the, you know, the 40s, 50s, and 60s, sort of the heyday of that manufacturing, there was dozens and dozens of brands. Especially of radios, like the 30s, 40s, and 50s tube radios, dozens and dozens of brands. I mean, I on Facebook, it's Antique Radios page that I joined, and I'm seeing radios on there that I'm like, I've never even seen the name, more or less the brand.
There were manufacturers in the Twin Cities.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you got to go up to the museum.
I'm going to have to go up there, I guess.
I mean, that'd be like me not going, you know.
Yeah.
You got to get up there. Final break this hour on the Wayne Eddy Affair. We'll be back with Roger Petty in just a moment.
Have you ever felt like your business has been tripped up by your bank? Friends in Bank & Trust understands how to be a financial resource for all types of small and large businesses and how to finance them. You might say that we are the best-kept secret in business banking. Friends in Bank & Trust, the bank that comes to play.
Contact your local Friends in Bank & Trust office at friendsinbank.com. That's FRANDSEN bank.com.
Member FDIC.
Are you tired of that icky old shower, crumbling old tile, or outdated bathtub? Rebath can help in as little as one day. Rebath is locally owned and would be glad to meet with you for a free estimate. Call us today at 1-800-BATH-TUB to turn that old bathroom into new.
Family Fair, Northfield's newly remodeled grocery store downtown, has a new name, a fresh look, and new options. Betty's Mac and Cheese with smoked jalapenos and tomatoes is a must try. Paninis and grilled wraps are all made with the smoked meats from Betty K's and grilled fresh in the store. Stop in, grab the weekly ad, get a Starbucks, get what you need, and be on your way in minutes. Family Fair, your local neighborhood market that provides real values for real people in real communities, right here on Division Street.
Number one in 1977. I gave him a hint. I said it's going to, I said saddle shoes and buckskin shoes. There was a guy by whose first name was Pat, and this is his daughter.
Yeah, I totally drawn a blank on this one.
Pat Boone was
well,
the father.
I remember Pat Boone. Yeah,
and this is Debbie Boone.
Debbie Boone.
And the name of the song is coming up right now. Are you ready? Here we go.
Light up my life.
Yeah.
I guess that's...
Believe it or not, that was a
number one
song.
In 77?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right.
What a deal.
Well, appropriately, because I'm interviewing you, class of 77, and you light up the TV sets and the lights and all that. And, I mean, I'm so old, I remember TVs being on from 6 until 8, and that was about it. And then they showed the test pattern.
Test patterns.
And that was fun. And, of course, they played the national anthem before and after and... But what I want to do, Roger, is I would like you to come back, and what I want to talk about is your experience that you have had in regards to being the sound guy, the board man, or whatever terminology you use. I feel self-conscious running this board over here, which is quite simple.
Well, it looks like you've been doing pretty good with it.
Yeah, but I got you, the pro, looking over my shoulder. Before you come back, there's one question I hope I don't forget. Do you really need a board with 15 knobs going up and 20 rows going left and right?
Well, you know, for me, it's I tend to have gone all towards the new technology, but I've generally thought that the more knobs, the better.
Okay, confusing. Impress people. Do you ever use auto-tune for the bands?
No.
Not that you'll admit?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. I don't know.
I don't get that. I don't get it at all.
Have you ever been involved in karaoke?
No.
Okay. So when you come back, I want you to bring up some of the name groups that you've worked with. How far you've traveled.
Sure.
Name drop as much as you want.
Oh, that'll be easy.
Because you have a lot of them?
A lot of them.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to it.
It's nice to have the warning, then I'll get the list together.
Yeah, that'd be great, you know, because, you know, I think everybody likes the name drop. I did it today with Johnny Cash. Well, do you know how to give a proper radio station identification at the top of the hour?
No.
Okay, I'll
you're going to have
you.
To do it. You'll teach me. Maybe I'll get it next time.
I'll repeat after me. KYMN.
KYMN.
Northfield, Minnesota.
Northfield, Minnesota.
1080 on your AM dial.
1080 on your AM dial.
95.1 FM.
95.1 FM.
And now, here's Terry Knight.
It's time for 15 with the Author, hosted by Terry Knight. Join Terry as she opens the cover on a different book each week and talks with the author about their book, their life, and their message. Take a deeper look under the cover with Terry.
Your career has wound down. The kids have moved, and your schedule's clear for the next 30 years. Now what? My guest today is Helen Wilkes, author of The Aging of Aquarius, Igniting Passion and Purpose as an Elder. In your youth, you cared about people and planet Earth and had grand visions of changing the world, but at some point, day-to-day life got in the way. Still, that old you remains alive. Now, with the rest of your life ahead, you can be the change and make this next stage of your life the most powerful yet. So says Helen. Welcome to the show, Helen.
Thank you so much.
You are an octogenarian who survived a lifetime of hardships ranging from fleeing Nazi Germany as a child to navigating personal and professional obstacles to create, obviously, a very rewarding life. Now this, what prompted you to share your wisdom on so-called retirement?
I think I was inspired by the people I saw around me.